Voices in Time, recording life stories.
All right, we're back with Anne, and we'll pick up a little bit from last week.
And there are a few things I left out that I would like to talk about. First of all, I told you that my mother had become a convert to the Catholic faith before she got married. And she made her first communion during the wedding mass. And we always thought that was really special that she made her first communion on her the day she got married. My parents did live in an apartment before they moved into their first house. And my mom used to tell a story about how it was during Prohibition. And so the first party they had in their apartment, they made gin in the bathtub. And she said it ended up, everybody got sick. They were throwing up all over the apartment, in the bathroom, in the kitchen sink, and bowls, and over the second balcony. They were throwing up everywhere, she said. They laughed about that for years. So, and I had an uncle that my dad loved to tell stories about. This uncle was my dad's brother-in-law, and he was a lawyer, and he worked in the courthouse, and he had a thing about his socks, and he would change his socks about 6 times a day. Finally, the judge got after him and told him he had to stop putting his socks on the radiator in his closet in his office because it wasn't very professional. And among my favorite stories about this uncle was he used to stop at his favorite bar on the way home from work a lot. And he would park in the no parking area in front of the bar. And one day he drove up and a police car was in that parking place. So he went down a couple blocks, used the public phone, and reported a robbery. In an area of about 2 or 3 blocks away. And they came running out, and the police got in their car and drove off, and my uncle just drove right into a regular parking place. But my dad always got a big kick out of him and telling stories about him, so we really enjoyed that. And he lived with us. He and my aunt and their daughter lived with us for a while when he was between jobs. So it was Carol and Madeline and Nora Finney. And Nora and I still meet frequently. So after we raised our families, we got back together, all the cousins. And we're closer now than we were when we were raising our families. Some things that were different in my lifetime than my children's was that there were lots of deliveries besides the mail, which we have nowadays, still have. There was the milkman. He delivered milk every morning. Then there was a huckster that came around to the homes. They had trucks full of vegetables that they had gotten at the market, things that they had gotten at the market, and they would sell the vegetables to the housewives. There weren't very many housewives that had cars. There was no second cars, no second homes, things like that, because we just came out of the Depression, and people were very frugal. My husband and I were raised by frugal parents, and my husband is very frugal. And he says I'm not, but in ways I am, because I was taught to always turn the lights off when we went out of the room, and we drive by our children's houses, and all the whole thing's lit up. You know, we think, my mother wouldn't like that, and you know. But anyway, things are different now because of the times, especially of the Depression.
And did you have ice delivered also?
Well, that's one of my stories.
Okay.
We didn't at my house because we had a refrigerator, but my grandma still had an ice box. And to this day, sometimes I call the refrigerator the ice box. It had, the food was kept in the bottom. The top of it was a compartment for a big block of ice. And whenever she needed ice, she would put a sign in her window. And it was just a little sign that said ice on it. And the delivery man would go by and see the sign. And if we were over at her house when the ice man cometh, we would run out and he would take the tarp off the back of his truck, and the back of his truck was filled with huge blocks of ice, and he would chip a piece off the edge and give us a piece of ice to eat, and then he would take his big tongs and he would cover his shoulder with a tarp and put the block of ice on his shoulder and carry it in, put it in the compartment in the ice box. And another thing, my grandma and most of the housewives, it was just a common thing to have your groceries delivered. And I remember her groceries being delivered, and the young man would come in and put all the groceries on her big table in the kitchen and leave them there. And then,
did she have to order them in advance, or would you go to the
store? She ordered them in advance.
Okay.
Over the phone, which everybody did have a phone by then. And also there was the manor man who delivered bread, and there was a horse on the front of his delivery truck, and it was not a truck, it was a horse-drawn carriage type thing, and he delivered mainly bread to all the houses every day, so we had fresh bread. And of course the horse would leave his droppings once in a while, but anyway that's something that was different. And since there were very few second cars, we walked everywhere. I walked to school every day, and we knew everybody up and down the block because we didn't have any air conditioning or TV to keep us in. The neighbors were always out visiting with each other. And I remember an old man who, when I would come home from school and went to half day to kindergarten, he would come out on his front porch and wait for me to come by, and I'd stop and talk to him. And he had, I think it was the Crimean War, does that sound right? That he had been, he was a soldier in it, and he used to tell me about his wartime stories. I think that was the war, I'm not sure. Does that sound right? And so he told me his war stories, and I got to know him. His family all worked, so he was there by himself, and I think I was the highlight of his day. Well, one day he called me up there, and he gave me a string of pearls. Well, I took it home, and my mother wasn't happy about it. She said, I shouldn't be accepting presents like that. So she made me take it back, and I just felt bad because I felt I was hurting his feelings for returning it, but my mother said so, and I had to obey. And then I took my swimming lessons at Paseo High School, which was fairly new at that time. And there was a woman, an older woman, who I met on the way, and she would sit on her porch and wait for me. And one day she asked me if I had a doll that I would like her to make clothes for. So I brought my favorite doll, Susanna, and gave it to her, and she made the most beautiful crocheted dresses for her. And I don't even think I ever knew her name, but she was so sweet and so nice, and we formed a bond just by me walking by. Oh, another thing that was different was the doctor came to our house every time we got sick, and our doctor is Dr. Glasscock, and our pediatrician, and he was a friend of my dad's because he had also gone to MU. And I remember one time he came when I was in seventh grade. Before my sixth year in grade school. And I had pneumonia. And I remember my mother being so thankful that it wasn't polio, because people were getting polio it really affected them. Some of them didn't walk the rest of their lives, like our president, Franklin Roosevelt. And I remember her making sign of the cross and praying after he left, being thankful that it was pneumonia instead of polio. So that leads up to probably where I entered grade school. And I remember my mother taking me to kindergarten. We lived in St. Francis Xavier Parish, which was on 52nd and Troost, across from Rockhurst. And I was used to going to Mass there every Sunday, so was acquainted with the school that was on the same block. And seems like every school I went to has been torn down by now, or changed drastically. But I remember going in my first day of kindergarten. Don't remember much else about kindergarten and first grade and second grade. We went, the boys and girls were in the same class, but I remember making my first communion in first grade, and we always had processions. We had a lot of processions, and I was always second one in line because they did it according to height, and there was always one girl that was shorter than I was. Her name was Mary Ann Smeltz, and so. I knew that I was going to be second in line every procession because I was second shortest. And I remember my first communion day wearing a long white hose, and they were attached by pins to my underwear. That stands out in my mind because they were I wasn't used, and they really bothered me, you know. And all First Communion, confirmation, everything, my whole family came to it because I was the oldest grandchild, big deal. And so it was always the big celebration. It was a Jesuit parish because it was across the street from Rockhurst, who was taught by the Jesuits. And there was only Jesuits at St. Francis. They ran the parish. And until I went into high school, I didn't know there were any other kind of priests but Jesuits, because that's all I dealt with. They said the masses at church, the homilies, and ran the school and parish. And we're over across the street at Rockhurst. I didn't know about any other kind of priest until I left great school. The Sisters of the Blessed Virgin Mary, they were based in Iowa, taught me through grade school, and they were the strictest order on God's green earth. I swear they were. And but they were good teachers and good educators, and they taught us the foundations of our faith, and I grew in faith through them. They taught us the catechism more than taught from the Bible. So we weren't real familiar with the Bible, except it was the Gospels, epistles and Gospels were read every Sunday during Mass, and the priest would give a homily on them. So that's where we learned more of the Bible, but it was catechism in school. We only had grades kindergarten through seventh, because we didn't have eighth grades until about 2 years after I graduated from grade school. They put the eighth grade in. And my husband and I both, when we entered grade school, we were only 4 years old. And when we graduated from seventh grade, we were very young to go into high school. We didn't have real boyfriends or girlfriends in the upper grades, because it was a different time, and we didn't have eighth grade. At third grade, they separated the boys from the girls. So I went through grade school only in a class, girls' class, and the boys only went in the boys' class. I remember one teacher that used to give the boys carrots, thinking they would grow and grow. Sister Mary Peter, she was a character. She would feed the boys their vegetables, mainly carrots, because she thought they would learn better, have better eyesight. And like I said, I walked everywhere. My mother walked everywhere except when we took the bus downtown. My mother waited for Klein's month-end sales. And she would take me to them before I started school. And she was a holy terror in that store. I remember she forgot I was even with her. I'd have to hang on to her skirts. She'd read the ads in the paper before we go, and she loved those month-end sales. And I remember the dime store downtown, it had a counter where you could eat. We usually had a sandwich there. And they also had a piano, and a person who played the piano all day in the dime store. So that was different. And I remember my mother's, I told you my mother was beautiful, and she had I always wish I had gotten her complexion, because she had the most clear complexion, and she always got her lotions for her complexion at Emery Bird's when we go downtown for the month-end sale. And that was one of the things I loved to do, was sit and watch her and her routine at night before she went to bed, how she cleaned her face and put all her goop on and all that. And she did the same thing in the mornings before she got dressed. So that was one of the things I'd love to do, is just sit there and watch her, you know. Going back to
school
and when we walked all the time, the only car we had was my dad's car, and it was given to my dad by the county, who he was chief deputy surveyor for the county highway department, and it was a political job. And they gave him a car with a stipulation that only he and no one else drove it. My mother knew how to drive, but she was never able to drive our car that we had because it didn't really belong to us. They gave him a new car a year, so it was always a big deal when he brought home the new car. And he would take me places if it wasn't within walking distance, you know, at night, but after he got home from work. But all the other times we walked. My mother, when I first started kindergarten, would walk me to school, and then she started letting me walk home by myself. And I told you before about having to sit and wait for her down at the Paseo. And
talk about academics of school a little bit. And
academics, like I said, the nuns were really strict, and they made sure we knew our lessons. And I was only an average student. I had a lot of fun, but it was only an average student. But the one that had the most influence on me was when we went into third grade. It was the first year that we didn't have boys in our class, and Sister Mary Thomasine, I felt like I had a bond with her. She is very strict, but she never raised her voice. It was like my home. My parents never raised their voice. I never heard them raise their voice toward us, except one time my dad with my brother and my dog. All the other times, never raised voice at us or between my mom and dad. Well, Sister Mary Thomasine was like that. She never raised her voice with us. She had one of those bells that sat on her desk that you would tap. And if she ever wanted anybody's attention or she thought they were getting into trouble, she'd tap that bell and stare at that girl. And the girl would be, you know, would right away turn around, because there was one girl that was always giving sister trouble. And to this day I remember Esther Shrewsbury, and I was wondering whatever happened to her and if she was normal when she grew up, because I remember her sister Mary Thomasine taking her out into the hallway and hitting her head against the wall. And I thought, oh my gosh, I hope she, you know, well, the rest of us really straightened out. But anyway, sister would be playground moderator a lot. And when I get tired of playing, started learning how to play volleyball during that time, I would stop playing and go over to where she was and walk with her on the playground. And she taught me lots of ejaculations, which are short prayers to Jesus and Mary and Joseph. My real devotions for Mary started in that grade. I walked almost every day with her, and praying with her. And because of her, I think I became very devout in my faith. But most kids were devout, but I felt like she nurtured me a little more because of that time on the playground. And then she called my mom and asked my mom to do her shopping. And my mom said she would be very embarrassed in clients when she asked for double D bras. But anyway, my mom did a lot of shopping for her. And one of the big things that happened to me was one day in May, the classes had individual May crownings. And then the big May crowning at the end of the year was always at Rockhurst High School. And the seventh graders, one of the seventh graders would crown the Blessed Virgin, and the graduation class would be up in the stands with the Virgin Mary up there, and all the rest of the classes were down on the gym floor. Well, besides that crowning, each class had their own individual May crowning. And one day in May, Sister Mary Thomasine said, we are going to have our May crowning after return from lunch. And she said, I want you to draw from the hat a number, so that a certain number will get to crown the Blessed Virgin. Well, Sister asked me before I went home for lunch what my number was. And when we came back from lunch, she announced the number 17, and that was always my lucky number after that, was the May crowner. And, she asked who had 17 to raise their hand. So I crowned the Blessed Virgin that year.
A little bit of a teacher's pet,
yeah,
maybe.
I don't know, but maybe it was because of my mother. But anyway, that was a big deal for me.
Did any of the other students, it sounds like you really opened up to that, you know, and you wanted more from your teacher. Were you kind of the only student really doing that, or were there some other kids wanting that as well?
Every once in a while, there were some other girls mm-hmm. that would walk with us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think, yes.
You were consistent. Yes. You wanted that.
I was more consistent mm-hmm. than they were, because I love doing that.
Yeah.
I loved praying to Jesus, and I would write poems to him and sing to him, and I loved his Mother Mary. I grew in it. I had a great devotion to her. Mm-hmm. And at one time I talked about being a nun later on, mm-hmm. but my mom and dad wouldn't hear of it. Our report cards were a big deal. The pastor of the parish would come in and hand out report cards. And if you got first honors, second honors, there is a little ribbon that said first honors or second honors on them. I usually got second honors. Every once in a while I get first honors, but mostly second honors. And if we got good report cards, we brought good report cards home. My dad would always make a big deal of it, and we would get to go out to dinner at Bluebird's Cafe and cafeteria, or Dixon's Chili, and then we would go downtown to the Tower Movie Theater. And he liked the Tower Movie Theater because it had a stage show after each movie at night. And we, at that time, there was no TV, so they usually had the newsreel. And that's how we saw a lot of pictures about the war. And we'd have a cartoon, then we'd have the main events, and the Tower Theater was the only one that had a stage show. And I don't think my dad looked in the paper to see what was on one time when we went down there, because we saw Mae West.
By accident.
And my dad never said a word to us about it. We just saw it. Never said a word to us about it. But that was a big deal, report cards. And then my summertime was, I consider as baseball time, because my dad grew up playing baseball. I played semi-pro, and he taught my my brother to play baseball, and my brother was on a team, and he went, he played to semi-pro, and then he played for KU. He was pitcher. My dad was third baseman, my brother was a pitcher, and every night after dinner, I would help my mom with the dishes. I would dry the dishes. And my brother and father would go down to the middle of the sale and throw the baseball. And when they weren't doing that, the baseball game was on the radio. And I always, to this day, when I hear a baseball commentary or something, I always think of my dad sitting right next to his radio listening to the baseball game. And then I spent a lot of my time at my brother's baseball games. And what a fun night was every Monday night in the summer. The men's, I get the Holy Name Society, they called it, had played softball at, on the Rockhurst field. And all the families would go watch them, and of course they were getting older, and it was they had more fun, and it was just a relaxed time, and all the families rooted for the for their dads, and you know, it's just a fun time. And
what about chores? Have we talked about that? Did you have responsibilities or chores around
this? I dried the dishes, and kept my room.
Yeah.
I had to keep my room clean. Saturday was cleaning day. Mm-hmm. I helped my mom clean. She always waited till Saturday so I could help her. And I remember dusting and singing "You Are My Sunshine." We would sing together "You Are My Sunshine" the whole time we were cleaning. And I learned to change the sheets, and she taught me how to keep a good house because she was such a good cleaner. She didn't ask me to help her do her spring cleaning or fall cleaning, which I was very thankful for, but every Saturday we could clean. And then I would help her. I would dry the dishes every night.
Did you earn an allowance?
I earned an allowance, but it was like a nickel to 15 cents. My gosh, I tell my kids when I started babysitting, I only earned 25 cents a quarter, which, you know, a quarter an hour, which is so different from what they earn now. During that was usually my Saturday morning was helping my mom clean house. And during the school year, we went to 8 o'clock mass on Sunday morning. And the 8 o'clock mass was the children's mass. And so the children sat by grades with their teacher sitting there with them. And all the parents sat in the back. So our families were actually separated for 8 o'clock mass. And one thing I remember about that, we could not eat before mass. And so if we didn't have much to eat the night before, you know, we didn't eat till after 8 o'clock mass. When we visit after mass, and by the time we ate, it was 9:30 and or 10. And there was always this one girl, I don't know whether she had something wrong with her or not, but you could depend on her fainting during mass every Sunday. And then I remember, and we always had to look ahead and never turn, never talk. We were very disciplined. And but one Sunday, there was no air conditioning, and when it got hot in the spring or all the windows were open, and we all, there was usually a bird that got in, you know, flying around. And my dad, remember, came out of church laughing so hard one day. One of the birds was flying around, and an usher. There was a bald man. They knew him. He owned the drugstore at 55th in Troost. But he was sitting in the back pew, and one of the ushers, as the bird flew by, sprinkled holy water on top of his head. And he got up and ran out of church because he thought it was the bird. That was, I mean, even though we were well disciplined and very devout, there was some things going on once in a while.
So you say you couldn't even like turn your head, but I mean, what would the punishment be? Would they call you out, or were you sent out of church?
Well, we were told about it.
Afterwards,
on Monday.
Scolded on Monday.
And then we had benediction at 5 o'clock mm-hmm. every Sunday evening. Mm-hmm. We had rosary and benediction. Mm-hmm. So we would have to go back to rosary and benediction at 5 o'clock. My parents usually went with me. Mm-hmm. And so I went by car, but a lot of times I walked. If we did not go to benediction, we had to have a written excuse for why we did not attend benediction. And I remember my teachers always loved my dad's excuses for not coming to school when I was sick, mm-hmm. and if I missed benediction, because he had a very beautiful handwriting, and he made a big deal of, made a very formal note, and they just loved his excuses for me. It's funny the things that you remember. I had a dog named Miss Muffet. It was a Cocker Spaniel given to me by the neighbor lady as a puppy, and I love that dog. And I remember when Miss Muffet was hit by a car on the Paseo. When she got out, she just would run, you know, and she got hit. And I remember I walked to benediction that day. I sobbed all the way there. I cried all the way through the service, and I sobbed all the way back home, and I sobbed through dinner, and I sobbed when I went to bed. It was really devastating when I lost that dog. It was the first thing that was really close to me that had died, you know. I was probably about in fifth grade when that happened. Yeah. So Dad brought one of the first TVs in, I think I was in seventh grade. Okay. And it's amazing that the difference now, when it's all the channels, all it's on 24 hours a day now, but when it first came out, we could only turn it on like for an hour at first. That's all we could get. And it was usually the news, and then it went into maybe 2 hours, and then it gradually grew. But we would have a hit parade, I remember. It was the top 10 songs of that time. And then we had a comedian, and then it just finally, you know, it kept growing as far as the time. Pope Pius XII and Franklin Roosevelt, they were the two main ones in authority of the church in the United States when I was growing up, and they both had long a time in office, and they both died close to the same time. I don't know whether it was by years or by a year, or I don't remember, but I just remember they were the main ones while I was growing up, and they both died close to each other in my thoughts. I don't know whether they actually did or not. When I was in seventh grade, the big polio epidemic hit Kansas City the summer between sixth and seventh grade. And we started school 2 or 3 weeks late that summer. And they closed the swimming pools and everyone was supposed to stay home as much as they could. So there weren't any big gatherings or anything. It was a very scary time because there was no vaccine at that time. And when people got polio, they were paralyzed in some way or another. It was just plain scary.
Did you know many people that were got polio?
There were a couple of children that I knew in my neighborhood, but no one at school. I also remember, like I said, things you remember, was the first day back at school. I was so glad to start school late because the homework hadn't started yet. We usually had lots of homework in the upper grades. And the first day back at school, our teacher made up for it because we had to memorize the whole last gospel of John our first night. Seventh grade then went, was pretty much calm and not much happened, except it was a big deal that we were graduating that mm-hmm. year. Mm-hmm. And we got to be up on the bleachers for the May crowning, and I look back, and the only time I really got in real trouble with my parents over school, and it wasn't really over school, but they took our pictures every year. And way back in second grade, I forgot to tell you this, my mother gave me money to pay for my pictures. And at noontime when I came home for lunch, and when I went back, the candy store was opened, and I thought I would enjoy the candy more than I would having the pictures. So I spent some money on candy from the candy store. I had no pictures that year. My mother wouldn't give me any more money, but she let me know that it was not a good thing to buy candy instead of pictures. That we had a graduation party it was given by, in fact, it was a cousin of Bill. I knew a lot of Bill's family before I ever met Bill, and dated in high school a lot of his friends, classmates, before I ever met Bill. But the seventh grade party was given by his cousin Barbara Hodes, who was in my class at Blue Hills Country Club. And one of the things I remember was we wore our May crowning clothes, and we wore hose for the first time, and it was a big deal. And most of us held our hose up by round garters, and we rolled the hose down with those garters. Well, some of us ended up having a contest of who could walk the golf course, who could walk the farthest without their hose falling down. We couldn't touch our hose. And the one who won was the one who kept their hose up the longest.
Who won?
Okay, no, I don't remember who won. Boy, wasn't me. And we rode, we not only walked everywhere, but we rode our bikes everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I would just take off on my bikes. Most of us did, you know, and mm-hmm. We were very free. We never had to worry about anyone molesting us, or we were just free. Mm-hmm. And I remember taking off on my bike during the summer and deciding, when I was two blocks away, to go on to Swope Park. I was usually with a neighbor or something. We ride our bikes to Swope Park, which was pretty far away. And they had a swinging bridge there. We had fun riding it over the swinging bridge. And we would even, we'd go to the swimming pool. Mm-hmm. And it was just mm-hmm. a time of freedom, mm-hmm. you know. No real worries. Mm-hmm. The war was over by the time I graduated from grade school, upper grades, you know, mm-hmm. was by the time I was in the upper grades. Mm-hmm. And it was just...
What about accidents? Like, I know the society-wise things seemed free and easy, but you probably still weren't safe from bumps and bruises or any broken bones, any things like that happen?
Only for falling off my bike a couple of times that I really... never really had any accidents or anything like that. Yeah. They closed that swimming pool at Swope mm-hmm. Park when the polio epidemic showed up. Mm-hmm. So, but besides, it was just a time of freedom for me, mm-hmm. and for everybody. Everybody was so happy that the war was over, and it started, it was right before the 50s, and the 50s was when we went through high school. It was a time of fun and freedom and happiness and
you talked about toys, like you mentioned your doll, Susanna. Uh-huh. What are some of the other toys or games and things like that you did for fun?
I had a collection of dolls that were given to me as as a young girl, that I got to the point where I really didn't play with them, but I had a collection of them. I think I mentioned before that the neighbors would get together, the neighbor kids, play kick the can, or Johnny, maybe cross your red river. We would play statue, or we'd swing each other around, and how we, the first one that moved after they landed in a certain position, lost. And we had all kinds of games that the kids don't even know about now. We played cards. We played jacks. We jumped rope a lot, and we had all kinds of things that we would say when jump rope, the rhymes, and we usually had a person on each end of a long rope and jump in and then say our rhyme and jump back out. And we had yo-yos that we played with a lot. That's, you know, the only, my mom taught me how to play solitaire. Mm-hmm. And she had a bridge group that she played with for 50 years. And I loved to listen to them when they came over. Oh, and boy, did she really clean her house before they came. they had played with each other for so long, they got to the point where one would deal a card, they would deal the cards, and then one would bid, and then they would start talking I mean, and they talked for the longest time. And then they went, one of them ended up saying, "What was bid?" You know, and then someone, once they found Trump, well, then they'd start playing, and one would say, "What did you play that card for? You know, you shouldn't have played that card." You know, and then they were just funny to listen to, and they learned all the they told each other all the gossip. You know, all during. Well, half the time was talk, the other half was playing cards. But the, boy, they had fun. Mm-hmm. And that was a great memory. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, after graduation, then I went to Hogan High School. And it was out between Visalie and Meyer. I mean, it was on Meyer between Visalie and Truist. And it was fairly new diocesan school. And I was thinking about either St. Teresa's Academy or Hogan High. And like I said before, my dad gave his opinion of both schools, and he said, and then he ended with, he thought St. Teresa's girls were all boys crazy because they didn't go to school with boys. So I ended up going, that was one of my main reasons for going to Hogan High, and walked back and forth, long ways.
Well, like how far would you say?
I lived on 52nd Street to Meyer, which was the block past 63rd. There were terraces mm-hmm. in there. It's a good, you know, it's a good
about
walk.
A mile maybe.
Mm-hmm. They were taught, we were taught there by nuns mm-hmm. from Leavenworth. They were not as strict, but they were good teachers. And I remember my first day of school at Hogan, I sat next to this girl in English class, and our teacher had asked us to write an autobiography so we would get to know each other. So we were all from all parishes. This girl sitting next to me wrote her biography, and then we exchanged after and we both started out, "I was born at St. Joseph Hospital on October 29th, 1934. And I looked at her, I said, "You copied." Well, it turned out we were born same day, same place, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. same time, almost mm-hmm. same time at St. Joseph. So it was the first time that I changed classrooms, mm-hmm. Which is different than our kids did when they went to high school. First time I went to mixers, dance, mm-hmm. and I had more fun at those mixers because my aunt, my mother's sister had married, she met this guy during the war at the SOS, at the dances they used to have for the soldiers. And did I tell you this about how she read her letters to me that she received from this guy in the service? And I imagined tall, dark, and handsome guy, and when I first met him, I was so disappointed because he was not tall, dark, and handsome. He was a little scrawny guy, but he had the greatest personality and told the best jokes. And well, she married him and went to move to California. Well, she had some dance lessons left over at Arthur Murray's, so she gave them to me. And I went to Arthur Murray's and learned how to dance, and had more fun at the mixers thought they were great. And then I went to the all the football and basketball games, belonged to the pep club. Bill used to tease me afterwards, after we got married, he went to Rockers, that we didn't win many football games, but we had the best pep club in town. And then I eventually, in my sophomore year, became a majorette for the band. There were six of us. Mm-hmm. I remember my first American Royal parade and how my blisters got so bad they were bleeding because my boots didn't fit right. And I had my first real boyfriend. And
so where were the dances and mixers held?
They were at school.
At school.
School gym.
Okay.
And
so do you want to talk about the first boyfriend? Or?
Oh, he was... he lived not too far from me, and we walked back and forth from school a lot. Mm-hmm. But he was captain of the football team, so he had football practice. He is a great student, and we walked in a group a lot, and then we ended up. He started coming to my house and visiting at night a lot. And he was my first real boyfriend. And then I had a boy that was a friend mm-hmm. that used to come to my house. He used to come to my house a lot. Mm-hmm. And his name was Ray. And I got him through a Spanish class. Mm-hmm. And we were just very good friends, a friend, real good friend. Had a lots of girlfriends, lots of, it was just groups, you know, we just groups of us that would meet at the games and, you know, would dance at the mixers mm-hmm. and it was a fun time. And it was the 50s and not, you know, no real worries. So my mom and dad were vice presidents of the Mother and Father's Club.
Okay.
And they integrated the Catholic schools when I was a junior. And my mother was vice president of the woman mm-hmm. who had been spanked as a child because she called her nanny a lady instead of a woman. You know, she grew up in the South, and so this was completely new to her, this integration. And being vice president of the Mother's Club, she had to go to meetings beforehand, and they prepared them for all the questions that they were going to have to answer and have to talk to the parents and convince them that was a good thing. And how proud I was of her, the way she handled it, knowing what she had to get over, you know. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what grade were you in when that started?
I was a junior when they started talking about it, and then I think the boy finally came our senior year. Mm-hmm. I need to put this in there because the kids don't realize how hard it was for, you know, they, because it's just normal now to have, mm-hmm. and our first mixer after he came, mm-hmm. he came to it, and he was the only black person there, mm-hmm. and he was popular eventually because he was a football star, mm-hmm. But when it came to the dance, I remember he asked Nancy Wagner, who was in my class, to dance with him. And she went out and danced with him, turned around, went back to the bleachers and started crying. And it was a different time, really a different time back then.
What about any arts or music? Did you ever get into?
I took piano lessons at one time, but didn't really stick with them.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was a majorette for the band,
right.
But no, I didn't have any real music abilities. I was part of my life. There was a residential home that the nuns ran. It was a 53rd and Highland. I used to see the little ladies that lived there going to the bus stop, and they all had their little hats on that looked a lot alike, and I used to just love to see them. And I had a girlfriend that lived across the street from there, and we used to roller skate on the driveway that went through the grounds. It was a big block area. Took the whole block. It was a big brick building. There lots of residents, both men and women. I used to go visit them and also roller skate around the grounds. And I remember they loved to see us, and they would save candy for us, and they would keep it in their fists, and by the time we got it, it was all sticky stuff, you know. And so we would say, oh, thank you, you know, and then would take it and throw it away later on. But these nuns had a statue of St. Joseph. These nuns were, did I tell you, they were called the Low Sisters of the Poor. They were originally from France. They were so beautiful with those older people. And they had a statue of St. Joseph in their kitchen. And whenever they would run out of something, like bread or whatever, they would put a piece of bread in front of the statue of St. Joseph. And whatever they put, bread, vegetables, or whatever, it always showed up. It always showed up. And like a bread truck would drive up and give them their day-old bread or, you know, whatever. And it was just beautiful to watch, you know, the way they ran this place. It was, they had a complete trust. Mm-hmm. And another place that I loved was during my time at Hogan, they built the big convent of Perpetual Adoration up on the hill, which is now the lighthouse. Mm-hmm. And the nuns would, they would pray 24 hours a day in front of the Blessed Sacrament. So the Blessed Sacrament was exposed there, and I always stopped by after school and made a visit there after they built it. And while they were building it, group of us would go up and play. You know, after the construction guys left, we used to go up and play on where this, I don't know where the tower, we'd go up there and look around, you know, look at the sights from up there. And that was a big part of my life all the way, even after I graduated from Hogan. I would go back there and pray and love to the peace, the comfort you would feel, and from prayer. And and when I was in high school, then also going back to Little Sisters of the Poor, I would go to daily mass there. I would climb over the back fence, walk a couple blocks to the in the dark to ring the doorbell for 6 o'clock mass. And that's where I learned to really love the mass. I had my prayer book with me, and it was, at that time, mass was in Latin, but it also had the English translation right next to it. And I just felt the Lord was blessing me because I was going to mass every morning, and I just felt like the Eucharist started, that's where it really started meaning so much to me. And my devotion just became, that's when I started talking to my parents about becoming a nun, and they wouldn't hear of it.
Why do you think they were opposed to it?
I was their only girl, and you didn't see much if you're, I mean, they could send you anywhere, you know, and I would be gone from them. It's not like having a family and giving them grandchildren. But I really admired the nuns and wanted, at one time, wanted to spend my life as a sister. So instead of becoming a nun, I took typing and shorthand in school when I was junior and senior. And then right before I graduated, I decided I wanted to become a nurse. There weren't many things at that time that girls could do. It was either secretary, nurse, or
teacher,
or nun,
yeah.
or you know, something like that. A waitress or whatever. But who wants to be a waitress for the rest of their life? My dad told me, he said, I don't see how any daughter of mine could be a nurse, because he couldn't, he hated to visit the hospitals, he couldn't stand the sight of blood. So he made me go to St. Joseph's Hospital and be a nurse's aide during the summer after I graduated. But before I graduated, during my senior year, I went to, I had a date with a Rocker's boy, went to a mixer after a basketball game. It was during the month of January, went to a, and during the time we were dancing, this guy cut in, and he had horn-rimmed glasses on, and he was tall, and he danced funny. He held my hand behind me when he danced, and little did I know that that was going to be my husband. So we met at the age of 16, seniors in high school. The week after that, one of the girls around ran around with said, hey, I hear Bill Hodes is going to ask you for a date. So when he called, I knew he was going to call. And he asked me to go to a movie that next weekend. And so that was our first date. And we went, when he came to pick me up, it's a wonder he wanted to come back, because our house was dark. My grandfather on my dad's side had cancer, and my mother brought him home to our house and took care of him during his last days. And that's when he was on his deathbed. And anyway, we went out to the Uptown show, double dated, and I can't tell you now who we double dated with, actually, but it was some some guy that lived around 39th Street, because for a long time that we were dating, Bill never drove. He always went with these two guys from 39 that lived on around 39th Street, and that's where I thought he lived for quite a while, which he didn't. I found out later, but we went at the movie. It was crowded. We had to sit on the very last row of the balcony. And I remember my feet wouldn't touch. And then afterwards, we went to drive in on the plaza.
Do you know what movie it was?
No, I don't remember what movie. But we sat in the car at the drive-in, and I remember it must have been Saturday night, because we were going to communion in the next day. No, it must have been Friday night, because for some reason I was going to Mass the next morning. And we had 20 minutes leeway where we could, before we had to fast. And so we sat in the car, ate, and talked. And I remember that night, I felt an attraction for him. I felt like I just knew in the back of my mind, he was one that I would like to marry. And to this day, I don't know why, because we are complete opposites. But I could tell he had a deep faith for some reason, for some of the things he said. And, but besides that, we were just complete opposites.
This has been a Voices in Time production. To learn more, call 913-831-0848.